Welcome back, guys, to the Beyond Condition podcast, the voice of bodybuilding. Now, before I introduce our guest today, he doesn't know this yet, it's a he, but this year, the episode we first did together, so returning guests for us all, actually, in the first 24 hours, got the most downloads in 2024 so far. So, without further ado, welcoming Aram back to the podcast, 4 weeks to the beach, and we're going to be talking, well, where do we even start, Aaron? Thank you, first of all.
How do we even set that bar even higher now?
I know. Well, it just popped off. Now, of course, we spoke about people trying to stay lean all year round, and that is a massive, massive subject for lifestyle clients, competitors, everyone, right? So it's, I guess that was sort of a pivotal subject for people. But today I want to also start by asking you a question that is a new feature on the podcast. And maybe we tie it into our subject today of talking about nutrition. But what would you tell yourself right at the start before you started bodybuilding if there was something that would really change your own journey?
Pick a lane and stay there for a little while. I think the problem is a lot of folks tend to want to jump around when things aren't bearing fruit at the rate that they'd like it to. And it can get psychologically muddy and you start to question yourself and then you're seeking validation. And this happens all the time. I mean, this happens to me every single day on Instagram where I have people who have coaches who are DMing me and saying, like, is this the right path? And I don't know. I don't know if it's the right. You have to ask yourself if it's the right path. You have to have a goal and a vision, and then you have to back your way into a set of actionable steps that make sense. But it's your body, it's science. It's going to be guess and check. It's, can I throw this at the wall and see if it sticks for some time? And does it align with what I want to achieve? And I was lucky because I was never too emotionally attached to any of the outcomes. And I consider myself lucky. Like, I really do. Like, some people are just so obsessed with the outcome that the process gets really uncomfortable. Whereas for me, I'm like, I'm going to do the work anyway, and whatever happens, happens. Ideally, I would like to look and feel better, and I achieve that more often than not. But there's people that today that start down one path, and 3 weeks later, well, this doesn't make sense and it's not working. I want to try something else and try something else and try something else. And it's just a very tiring, cumbersome feeling to think that it's not working when in reality, it's just you haven't really chosen a clear enough path for yourself.
Yeah, for sure. I feel like there's sort of that magpie syndrome, especially with social media, and this for sure ties into our subject of talking essentially about, different nutrition approaches, how influencers on social media can really fuck with our head. Let's play it straight. You're like you say, you're on a path and you see something, a reel or whatever, and it can really add so much confusion. And I'm glad you said about sort of coaching and people DMing you, because I have the same, and it can be quite a tricky scenario because it's like I don't want to step on anyone's toes, but there's, you probably get it. There's people reaching out that are like, I really don't feel like my coach is listening to me. This isn't working. I don't really know what to do. But then they have a tricky time with maybe coming away from that coach, and there's so much gray area there, and it can be quite difficult for us to, as I say, you don't want to step on toes, right?
I try not to, but I'm just generally a helpful person, so I want to ask a million and one questions before I understand why it's not working with that coach. Typically, if the attitude of the individual is that I'm expecting change to occur on a weekly basis, well, you're already going into it with the wrong mindset. So that's not a coaching problem, that's a client problem. But if I get a background on somebody and I'm seeing, okay, there's no emphasis on education, on training, there's no form check reviews. They're not really discussing psychological variables at all. Well, I can pretty much assume at that point that that's just not a good coaching environment, and that person has every right to be frustrated. But if you're getting everything you need and it's just an expectations problem, well, you can essentially tie that back to a coaching issue also, because all of my clients know exactly what the fuck to expect. Like, there is no, I mean, I had a woman today, she's been with me for 3 months and she's put on 5 pounds, but she's dealing with, like, I don't know, 17 different health issues. And I think she was at like just under 1600 calories on like 140 pound body weight, which is nothing. And she got triggered by something today, and she's like, I went to go put a piece of clothing on and it didn't fit right. I'm going out with my girlfriends. I want to cut calories. I want to do this. I'm like, listen, at the end of the day, I've warned you that it's not a good idea, but I'm a customer service representative. I'm not going to do much damage dropping you by 150 calories, whatever. But if it satisfies you psychologically, I'm not going to argue with you about it. If that 150 calorie decrease improves your compliance to some extent and gives you some psychological peace of mind, then I don't care. I'm not at a point in my career where I'm going to fight about this stuff anymore. And if you understand, if I've made it clear to you that I don't agree with this and I'm doing this because you want it, not because I think it's the right thing to do, then that's fine. Like, it's your life, it's your habits, it's your quality of life that's being affected, not mine. And I know that might seem brash or harsh, but at the end of the day, like, I really don't give a fuck. You're the one who has to be in the deficit, not me.
I feel like as well, coach's point of view, it sounds like we're quite similar there. I'm not in this role to bully people, to, get annoyed with people. I'm there to, like you say, serve the client. So the goal is X. And if they're not complying, if they're not, being accountable, et cetera, it can sometimes be, well, you're not hard enough on me. And it's just not me, having a life full of people being cunts, basically. I'm not there to be someone like that. And I really like where you mentioned there about the mental health side of coaching, right? So there's two sides to this. Some coaches don't want to offer that. And I think that if that's clear, fine. Some clients don't want to dig deep on past things that are going to hold them back. So, like you say, they're sort of restriction and things like this. But for me, I don't know about you, I've got to dig as deep as I can in a time frame. I don't just go in and say XYZ, but as I learn the client, I really need to understand them to map out what's appropriate. And it's not for me to say, oh, you fucked up, you're a this, that, and the other. It's like, how can I educate you and understand you more so that maybe this doesn't happen again? Or if it does happen, maybe a lesser degree. And that's certainly something I'm passionate about. And you said staying in your own lane. This for me is coaching. I've got to stay in my own lane. I'm not that type of person. Sounds like you're the same.
Well, I mean, the person's mindset might be the reason why they're not compliant. So if we understand that, like, protocols will work if we implement them properly, and the reason why protocols don't work is because we see compliance not be up to par, then we have to understand what the source of that non-compliance is. So if this is unreasonable expectations, if this is a history of disordered relationships with food, if this is a body image issue, if this is a mental health issue at all, then I don't care about the X's and O's of nutrition or training. None of that stuff matters unless we unlock the underlying reason for why that individual isn't able to put one foot in front of the other constantly. So it's like, what am I going to do? I'm not going to, she communicates with me on a weekly basis. She's been going through all sorts of tests. They're assuming, they're making inferences that she's autoimmune and everything else. And we've cut out gluten, we've cut out dairy, we've lowered stress, we've cut back on training. Her stress is high, her sleep sucks. And, it's like, do I feel bad that, like, you're gaining weight? Sure, but there's a reason for it. Like, this isn't by accident. Now, unless you're just completely lying to me, which has happened before, but it's not very common, then there's a reason that your body is undergoing a problem right now. So do we really want to sit there and hyper focus on your like, right now you're dealing with recovery from an injury. Like, are you going to be 100% focused on aesthetics right now? Like, no, it's the last fucking thing on your mind. You're just worrying about getting yourself back up to what your baseline standards are. And then once you get back up to speed, then you can start to focus on actual physical changes. But if you're sick, like, if you're actually in a sick state of being, why the hell is there any focus? Like, of course you're going to degrade your aesthetics. Of course your body's going to rebel. Of course your body's going to hold on to fat. That's just because you're sick. That's what's happening. Like, if you're sick, if you have 104 fever, you're not going to go work out. You're not worried that you're a little bloated that day. Like, it's not the last thing on your mind. But people that have chronic illnesses that aren't actually killing them, right? Like, type 2 diabetes, slow degradation. Heart disease happens slowly over time. So it's not like, ooh, I had a heart attack and I had to change my life, or I had a diabetic shock or a coma and I had to change my life. Like, autoimmune issues, inflammation issues, injuries, they happen so slowly that like it's hard to remove the emotion away from them and understand that you still need to be able to act reasonably during these things and shift your focus away from this undying need to be smaller.
Yeah, for sure. And I feel like as well, when we are looking at health concerns, all of what you've mentioned there and many other things that we could talk about, but the baseline there of trying to create a nutrition plan that suits that individual to help with their health, but also, leading towards physique goals, it's not going to be your sort of the title today is the junk food diet. You're going to be eliminating certain things like you mentioned there, gluten, dairy, things like this. So for someone to comply with that, with potentially something that's not on the alert, you're not going to die straight away. But day in, day out, we're adding foods that are going to complement and help your health condition. It can get to the point where people find it hard to adhere because maybe it's not the sexy stuff that we want it to be. But it falls back to the client, what do you want to do with your health and your physique? Because if we start going down these cycles of, overeating on junk food and not caring for our body, it's from a sort of coach's point of view, it's all we can do is give a plan. It's not something that we can, we're not there when we work online day in, day out, but working out the pathologies, the disordered ways of thinking, and trying to understand the client for sure is the route we want to go. But it really doesn't help when you have all this social media stuff, the external pressure. I've been to meals and things, and people go, "Have you tried keto? Have you done paleo?" And everyone's looking for the quick fix. And actually, let's face it, you get a calorie deficit for someone, if they can follow that, they will get results. Medical conditions, of course, we need to make adaptations there. But stress and sleep, like you said, so fucking massive when we're looking at this realm. But people, again, it's not sexy going to bed and doing a bedtime routine and all of this, but it can be if you want to.
Well, if you focus on how good it makes you feel, it becomes very sexy. And I always tell people, like, I had a person just send me a text message a couple of minutes before we started, and she's been sending me screenshots of her food log at the end of every day to like give her a little extra accountability. And she like sent me a smiley face after the picture, and she was in like the 90 percentile today, and she hit on most of her targets. And I said, just remember how good you actually feel today because of your compliance. I don't care about the number on the scale. I don't give a fuck about if you hit your workout or not. What I care about is tie that level of satisfaction and that self-appreciation also to how you actually physically feel. Did you have better energy today? Were you in a better, more pleasant mood today? Were you less reactive and less emotional? So if the answer to all those questions is yes, and then you can correlate that to eating properly that day, well, now you have a one-to-one relationship between compliance and effectiveness.
And it is a winning formula. I think that you sort of have to get to a point where you can accept that. And it's almost, for me, it's the extreme of when I'm out of routine, when bedtime is affected, things like this, because it's been so optimized for so long, I get such a kickback. It really doesn't help me, like digestion can be off if I'm not going to bed at my normal time and things like this. And it's almost gone to that extreme. But I've learned that it's certainly going to be, what do you want your lifestyle to look like? And do you enjoy bodybuilding, whether you're competing, whatever, is your version? Do you enjoy it? Because if you're tracking your food, if you're monitoring your sleep, all of these things, I find it fucking incredibly sexy because I think, it delivers me to my goals. It gives me focus every single day. And I personally want to have a coach, for the rest of my days, ideally, because I find it not necessarily the accountability, because I can do that, but it's nice to have your own confidant, someone that you can lean on, sense check, etc. And it's so important. But also tying into, if you have a coach, buying into them, if you've researched them, ideally had a consultation, you've caught the vibe, I think that it is so important. And I don't know what the answer is to, like you said at the start, staying in your own lane. When there's so much stuff put out from these influencers with millions of followers and whatever, have you got any advice to the listeners when they are, they're doing well, but they see something and it throws them off?
Just consider the information and what it's actually telling you. If it's giving you some type of very absolute type of a message, like this is the way, or this food will do this, or this workout promises this. If it's very absolutist in its messaging, it's clearly sales tactics and bullshit. Like, that's just how it is. There's never going to be a day in my life where I say that there's an exact way to do something. Just that's just the nature of science. That's the nature of the variability of the human body and how dynamic it truly is. So for me to say, okay, fine, let's break that down. So there are maybe a couple of absolutes, right? We know that quality sleep is the bedrock of recovery. We know that non-exercise activity should be as high as humanly possible because it doesn't promote a recovery demand, and we can do it all day, every day, and it wouldn't make a difference to us negatively. Right. So we can walk as you want to walk 30,000 steps a day, go right ahead. Not a problem. We know that eating mostly whole foods in their original or natural format is probably the most ideal eating pattern. And we know that protein should be the highest priority that we have as far as eating. We know that strength training is going to promote not only health or not only physique, but also health and longevity. Okay. Outside of that, everything is dynamic. Everything is can change. Everything can be altered. Everything can be adjusted to the individual specific needs. So outside of those five things, now it becomes a tale of consistency. Once consistency is there, then we can apply nuance. But without consistency, we can't apply nuance. And I think, if most of your audience is bodybuilding in nature, then they probably have all the basics down already. You don't need me to remind you to eat protein. You don't need me to remind you to train hard. You don't need me to remind you to drink your water. Most bodybuilders or people that are aesthetic-based athletes or even performance-based athletes have to bring themselves down to earth every once in a while and understand that the basics are always going to work. It's just a matter of how intensely do you want to dial up that knob or how much do you want to remove yourself from that area. And, if you want to try things like keto, and I've seen bodybuilders, women. Some women do really well on higher fat, lower carb when they're cutting. Some women do better on higher carb, lower fat when they're cutting. I mean, protein's always going to generally just be a staple. Some women respond really, really well to high rep end range failure sets. Some women respond better to lower rep sets that are taken to failure. But you don't know until you do things for long enough to try and see if it works. Now, I don't like the word try because try seems temporary.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
So let's put a standard on it. If it's a nutritional intervention, give it at least 30 straight days to take shape and see what happens. Like, don't just stop after a week or two and say this is or isn't working. Like, give yourself 30 straight trackable data days and understand how you're feeling and correlate it to everything else. And then if it's a training switch up or if it's a training alteration, give it 8 to 10 weeks to take shape, because that's how long it's probably going to take for your body to start to respond or not respond to it. But inside of those windows, you're just being impatient.
Yeah, for sure. And of course, that does lead into the extreme nature of competitors. Now, I remember when we did our first podcast together and you were like, "You lot are lunatics. Let's play it straight. I've got a lot of respect for you, but it's not something that I would do." And of course, we know the health implications to doing this, especially if you're going to compete for a long period of time. And I think that extreme nature, if you're whatever part of the phase you're in, even probably especially in a prep, you want it to hurry up. And I feel like it's so important, like you've mentioned, the journey and enjoying that, and realize you've got that goal day. And if things are happening, it's just sticking to that plan. But also, each day thinking, okay, so I'm in a really privileged position here to do a prep. I'm going to tick all of my boxes and ideally be a bit present. And maybe we can talk about hunger a little bit, because of course there's many strings to that bow. But when we talk about hunger management in a prep, you're deciding to do this. And yes, you're going to be hungry, but what do you expect from extreme sports? You're pushing against everything that your body wants to do, particularly as a female. We're brought on this earth to bear children, and we're not meant to be low body fat. And if you are choosing to do this, there's got to be a level of acceptance. I guess that mindset, you see a lot. I've had to mute and unfollow over my period of time, because it's like I cannot handle it when you've got someone crying into the camera on their story saying, I'm so hungry, I don't want to do this. And
So don't.
it
So
literally
don't.
is that simple, isn't it? And With hunger management, I know you work with a lot of lifestyle clients, and actually, I remember you saying you work with bariatric clients as well. Is there certain things you try and it is, of course, a lot of mindset, but is there certain things that you try and work on with people to help with that sort of not moaning about being hungry, as it were?
So interestingly enough, I actually just started implementing a 1 day, 24-hour fast weekly for myself.
Oh, cool.
And the purpose of doing it is purely just to try it and see how I feel. I'm not doing it for fat loss. I'm not doing it for body comp improvement. I'm not doing it for autophagy. I'm literally just doing it just to see how it feels, one. And I want to see how it allows me to manage psychologically, like you said, the hunger that happens due to not eating. And what I've noticed, like, this is my today's, like, I'm actually fasting today, so I'm only liquid. I'll do bone broth packets 3 times a day, so I get about 60 grams of protein from bone broth. I'll do a little bit of honey in my tea, so that'll be some carbs there. But outside of that, there's no solid food, there's no chewing, there's no eating
Whoa.
from dinner last night until dinner tonight. So I'll eat in about 2 hours. It's 5:30 now. I'll eat about 7:30, and I don't really get hungry until like I don't get noticeably hungry until about 4 or 5 o'clock. So right now,
You can feel
I'm busy. I'm doing stuff with you. I'm thinking. My brain is moving. I'm not hungry. But 30 minutes before we started, I was very hungry. And this is where I always tell people, there's days where you'll go 5, 7, 8, 9, 10 hours worth working, just drilling your face down into a computer, and you don't even think about food. But when do people start thinking about food? Is when they have time and stress is down. Right? Like they're sitting in front of the TV, it's 9 o'clock at night, they're done with their day, they can decompress, and that's when like everything starts to bubble up, and that's when the hunger hits you. So I think that just comes down to self-awareness and understanding what your own patterning and what your own behavior is. I think to manage hunger, obviously, if you eat a bolus of protein, meaning a good amount of protein per meal, and that's got to be as lean and as and I if you're in a, if you're in an actual planned deficit, like you're trying to diet, I like soft ground meats. So like ground beef, ground chicken or shredded pork, like something where you're not having to like chew and cut up a chicken breast because it's just so rubbery and just so labor intensive to get it down that you don't have the palate for that when you're dieting. You just want something that's like that can just almost slide in. So I think having like ground meats is really nice to be able to just be able to break that down for you already, and it keeps you full. Filling up your plate with vegetables, making sure that you're not drinking water while you're eating, but you're drinking water throughout the entire day, and drink way more water than you think you need. Like just fill up it, like by the third container of water, you should feel like the lower part of your belly being very, very distended, and you should be peeing like 5 to 7 times a day at least. Like this is a 40-ounce container. I think this is the fifth one I've had today, plus 3 cups of bone broth, plus a cup of tea and a cup of coffee. So I think just being able, and then also spreading your meals out throughout the day. So depending on your caloric allotment, like if you're somebody who's relatively low calorie, like let's say it's under 15, you can probably do that in 3 meals, right? 500 calories a meal, 3 meals, that's easy. But if you're starting to get to like, let's say you're a guy and you're like, you're dieting on 27 or 29 or 3,000 calories, you're not going to do that in 3 meals. You can, but you'll be very, very full immediately after each meal because you'll be eating about 1,000 calories per meal. And then you're going to have like this lull of 2 hours, but then you're going to be hungry again. And then like, let's say you eat that next meal as soon as you're hungry, then you have a 5 or 7 hour gap. So the likelihood of compliance starts to drop the hungrier and more food focused you become. It's like a dog, right? You keep waving treats in front of a dog, they're going to break at some point. They're going to want that treat. So if you can just give yourself some separation between meals, and I think every 3 or 4 hours tends to work pretty well. And that's why I usually tell people like 4 to 5 meals a day probably should do it for most of you. Obviously, the higher the caloric allotment, the better, the more meals you might want to split it out into just to make your digestion a little bit more favorable. But there's no secret to it, and it's whatever works for you. I mean, I think the basis of it is if you're eating your lean protein, if you're eating your vegetables, I like bulking meals up with like with bulky starches like sweet potatoes and not rice, because rice you're just not going to get many carbs for, especially if you're dieting. If you're not in a diet, if you're in a growth phase, eat all the rice in the world. Like you need as much carbs as you can get. But if you're in a dieting phase, I'm not eating rice at all because I'm not going to give my carb allotment to something that's that insignificant. I'd rather eat 300 grams of potatoes and get 40 grams of carbs out of that versus eating 80 grams of rice and getting 40 grams out of carbs out of that.
Yeah, for sure. And I think as well, you know, hunger management wise, there's a lot of things that we can look at in regards to your day-to-day life, what you're consuming essentially. So not only social media, but external pressures. And you know, social media, it all starts to calibrate into what you're searching for. So if you're looking at highly calorific foods, if you're looking at food porn, if your friends are sending them to you know, Instagram's like,
I'm going
okay.
to show you.
Yeah. What are you going to show me your phone?
My food is capybaras, or my phone is capybaras and food. That's all it is. That's all I look at. I look at animals. But you're right, like that. But that's such a strong message. Because think about it. Let's say you are dieting, and let's say you're already like you're 5 or 6 weeks into it, and you're just like you're at that point where you're like, okay, this sucks. I don't like this. And then you start looking at all these like cookies and burgers and pizza and fry. I mean, at that point, you would eat dog shit covered in chocolate. So why are you making your life more miserable by looking at that stuff? And I do think it makes a big difference. Like, we are a product of our environment. If our environment is surrounded by highly palatable, delicious foods that are very tempting in nature, like, you're not going to stick an alcoholic inside of a pub. Because he's going to probably fuck up at some point if his stress is high enough and if he's not managing his emotions well. So if your emotions are degraded and you're very highly reactive, and then you stick somebody in this environment where like food is prevalent or the messaging of food is very alluring, the person is going to have a much tougher time with all of this. So remove all that temptation as much as humanly possible, at least for the duration of time that you're trying to diet. Like, don't make it harder than it has to be because it sucks already.
Yeah, for sure. I feel like certainly in the early days, I used to look at like food porn, cakes, bakes, all of these things. And then it added to this like psychological warfare where I'd be doing my, you know, 2 hours cardio, and literally the whole time I'm like visualizing these foods, looking at them, imagining what they taste like. Then I'd go to bed at night thinking about it. And it wasn't until I got a few years in, I was like, why the hell am I torturing myself like this? And it was very internal. Like I never sort of told anyone or whatever. It was just like this battle. And I thought that because other people have these struggles on social media and put it out there, that it was normal. Bikini girls all look at food porn. They all eat food porn after the show. And consequently, this is a normal thought process. And it wasn't until I understood it and got some years in the game, I was like, Jesus Christ, you know, it's almost like the social media aspect is feeding into potentially disordered ways of thinking rather than bodybuilding itself, I would say. I'm sure you'll agree with that.
I'm not going to ever blame body. Like, it's like, you know, who killed the person, the gun or the person?
Amen. It's
Like,
not
you still have to,
leave
you still,
bodybuilding alone.
you got to pull the trigger, you know? So when I look at imaging of tracking calories as disordered eating, or, you know, stepping on the scale is bad for you, or, you know, these are all, they could all very certainly be triggers, and they can trigger a certain set of emotions to occur. But you as a human being is still responsible for those emotions and your perception of the problem. So I'm never going to say that bodybuilding is a problem, because there's plenty of bodybuilders who have a very healthy mindset about it.
For
And
sure.
they're very reasonable and they're logical and they remove emotion from it and they're professional and they do it for years and they have no problems with food. They have no problems with body image. But the problem is when you have, when it gets popular, which it has, and it gets very popularized, and now the barrier to entry starts to get lower and lower and lower, which means that the quality of the individual who's entering into this very, very difficult sport is getting worse and worse. As opposed to like in the 90s, nobody was a fucking bodybuilder. Like, you just didn't have it. Like, in the 80s, forget it. Absolutely nobody was a bodybuilder. And you were crazy for even trying to do it. And then now, because of the advent of social media and because like the bikini category is so easy to get into, it's not hard. Like, you could just take a girl who's relatively skinny, put a little bit of a delt on her, put a little tiny bit of a glute on her, and boom, she's a bikini girl. She was already skinny to begin with. She didn't really have to do much to be a competitor. And now she goes into a local show where there's no competition and she places first. And now she's an athlete, which, no, the fuck you're not. You're a ballerina and you're essentially, I mean, let's be honest. And I'm never going to shit on bodybuilding as a mentally tough thing to do. But to call it a sport, right? To say that it's a sport, it's a stretch for me. It's like saying obesity is a disease. You know what I mean? Like, obesity certainly is a condition that can be prolonged by habits. But like, take a bodybuilder and put them onto a soccer field or onto a football field or onto a basketball court, and we'll see who an athlete really is. Now, take that same athlete and ask them to build the best body in the world, and they probably don't have the skill set for it
Yeah.
because they don't have the mental and emotional fortitude to get through the discomfort of doing 40 minutes of cardio a day when you're depleted, because athletes are well fed,
Yeah.
right? The basis of athletics and performance is you're very well fed. You can carry some body fat in you. It's not going to be detriment to your sport. But a bodybuilding competitor is depleted to the nth degree throughout the entire process, and they're asking to do all this work on such little fuel. So just by the simple nature of that discrepancy in energy in and energy out, how can you possibly be athletic?
Yeah, it is
You know what
certainly
I mean? So
fucking, yeah.
it's not to shit on bodybuilding. It's just basically to say, like, let's be very careful about starting to put things into our Instagram bios and labeling ourselves as this person who we're really not, just because you did one bodybuilding show one time. Like, I'm not a model because I took some pictures once,
Yeah.
right? Like, I took pictures in 2015 and then I did it again in 2019. And by no stretch of the imagination am I going to put fashion model or fitness model in my Instagram handle. I'm going to stay the fuck
Okay.
I'm going to stay the fuck in my lane and say that I had a professional who made me look really good took some pictures of me. That doesn't make me a model. Just like, because you know how to lift weights and diet doesn't make you an athlete. It makes you a psychopath.
It's like this, it's almost like a skill set, I think, you know,
It's a
and
skill set. Absolutely, it's a skill set.
yeah, and it certainly, you know, it transforms your life potentially. It's just when you get to those extremes on either end, you know, you are literally living to bodybuild, and the concept of which is sometimes hard to grasp for people looking at getting in the sport, like you mentioned there, you know, someone might want to do it once and do it as an achievement and then not do it again. And I think that's actually quite cool because they're building this mental fortitude and they're able to celebrate it at the end with something phenomenal. But when you're looking at this in the long term, it's like all of those phases, which could stretch over, you know, a prep and a long off season. This could be 3 years of your life to then step on stage for 15 minutes. And it's like, that's a heavy ask. And then, you know, when you transform that into daily life, not a lot, you know, a lot of people don't withstand this for years at a time. Now, of course, there is people that do, but it's a very small percentage, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you don't see I think there's a longevity now because we have a better understanding of drug and pharmacology. We have a better idea of stress management. We know how to load manage better. We know how to fatigue manage better. So all those things I think are going to lend to people with bodybuilding and competing for longer and being healthier while doing it. But again, I just think that the quality of the sport itself is getting worse because there's just too many people getting into it that don't belong in it. Like, it's just. It is a very, very difficult thing to do. And I think that especially for women, like, instead of like going into bodybuilding to exhibit some level of control, because that's what most people do, right? Like,
Me included.
I'm gonna put a band-aid on my mental health. So I'm gonna put all my energy into exercise and dieting and nutrition. And I'm gonna create this physique because this is the only thing in my life that I can control. I can't control my emotions. I don't have good mental health coping mechanisms. So I'm gonna just become orthorexic completely, which just means being obsessed with exercise. And now I've created a new disorder, a new dysfunction. Well, that's gonna come at a price at some point. And I mean, look at other athletes in the world, right? Like, you're not gonna have a football player, American football or rugby, who's going to be playing that sport at that level at 65 years old, because they're going to fucking get killed. So now I like the fact that in bodybuilding, you have different classes and you have different brackets and you can kind of downgrade. And there is some level of competition that still remains, which maybe gets floats your boat or floats your fancy somehow. But at some point, like, how much more of your life do you want to dedicate to going through these seasons of like eating way too much to try to grow, which is uncomfortable, and then just basically going through this opposite extreme of eating way too little to try to shrink to get down to the body fat percentage you need to be on stage? You never really have any semblance of balance. Like, there's always, like, I think the bodybuilders who are the most successful, who are the ones who can spend years in between shows living a normal life, and then when they know they're ready for the compete, they can go balls in for 16 weeks, get done what they need to get done. And they have the discipline to do it, but to live like that chronically, I feel, and this is just my opinion. And again, I've never competed, so I don't know. How much life and quality of life are you missing out on for the potential of a trophy or a ribbon or a couple of pictures taken? Because from a money standpoint, we know it's not a lucrative career. It costs you way more money than you'll ever make, right? I mean, you've done it how many times? And it's really expensive financially. It's really expensive physically. It's really expensive emotionally. It fucks up relationships constantly. So I think you have to be very, very aware of what you're stepping into before you say, hey, I want to be a bodybuilder. Like, just know all the risks and make sure that you're working with somebody who's giving you a full risk analysis profile of what you're about to really bite off before you start chewing.
Yeah, for sure. I love that you sort of wrapped up there with, actually having a coach that gives you a timeline that talks about everything that's involved. Because, I've known people that have got close to the show and they couldn't do the show because they couldn't afford it because of all the costs that's gone into it, and they're sort of partway through a prep. And something I also talk about is you never know the percentage of people that had actually booked to do the show and they don't make it because they haven't had this outline and they haven't managed that expectations to go, does it this actually suit my lifestyle? And there's certainly, so many examples, and I know you align here with, I've had clients that do a photo shoot prep and we get close and it's like, right, we can push the button here if you can perform at work, if your relationships are okay at home, if your partner's on board, all of these things, food relationship is as good as it can be, as we're getting closer to this. Okay, let's push the button for 2 weeks or 4 weeks. This is what it involves. This is what you may feel. Talk to me if you get too much fogginess at work and you can't perform, and we can pull it back. And it's a really nice way to do it because you get that photo shoot as a goal, and you're not then, you can push and pull it a bit. Okay, maybe you might lose 2 more pounds if you were to dig a bit harder, but does that really matter as much? We're doing something like a photo shoot. And I feel like, outlining this and giving the possibility of people doing certain things before doing a prep or making sure you're very in depth, because the likelihood that someone could drop out or, find that they feel like they've failed because they can't complete the prep, if they can't even follow their diet for a few weeks, why are we looking at a prep? Yeah.
Well, and then also consider the usage of or the addition of drugs into the mix too.
Yeah.
You know, it's one thing to do this naturally, which I think if you're going to do that, do it naturally and just at least see how it feels to do it naturally. But if you're going to enter into the arena of doing it with chemical enhancement, I mean, your risk profile just went up by 100%. You know, now you're talking about lifelong potential problems if you do it the wrong way. Like this is like it's becoming my problem with bodybuilding is that because you have so many of these young kids who are like in their late teens, early 20s, who are on TikTok, who are on social media, who are basically boasting about their steroid usage. And yeah, sure, they're building great physiques, but they have boils on their back and their face is completely covered in acne. And half of them can't function like men. You know, I mean, I see this every day at the gym that I go to in San Diego, California here. They look great. They look great, but that little hour snapshot of them at the gym probably doesn't paint the entire picture of how they're actually feeling that day. How much mental anguish are they going through because their dick hasn't worked in 6 months? Or how
Yeah.
much rage are they experiencing because they're going through all these mood swings because they're not managing their drug protocol properly? And how psychologically damaging is it for a woman to be on stuff like T3 and ramp up their metabolism to the point where they can eat anything and just burn fat? And then when they're off of drugs, they can look at a piece of bread and start gaining weight. So I value coaches like you so much because you guys are doing it the right way, and there's so few of you.
Thank
Like
you.
I can probably name on two hands internationally how many people I would trust with bodybuilding coaching. Like 20 people, maybe 30. Internationally, people that I know because I'm tied to this network relatively closely. That means that there's millions of other ones that probably suck. And that's what people are exposed to. And then when they get into bodybuilding, it destroys the sport because the athlete's destroyed before they even started to get on stage yet.
And it fucks people up, Aaron. Like, it's no joke. And I have this, initial talk with people if they're looking at a prep. And, I say about all this risk versus reward, even without PEDs, but what this is going to involve, can we set up your life? And then I look for their initial docs. I go through that and then put the plan together as what the prep would look like. Can you do this? This is what it's going to look like as we move through the timeline. And I feel like, you know, I've said this on the pod before. Sometimes it's like I'm almost saying, don't do it, but it's not that. It's like we need to understand what is involved here, guys. I've had physical, you know, physiological kickback so much that I'm having to have, you know, a 2 to 3 year off season to work on my health. This is not a fucking piss take. This is, you know, organs and, you know, things that are not right for myself. I mentioned earlier digestion. I've come away from, you know, I'm happy to talk about it, but laxative use for me, it became an addiction and I didn't even know it was happening. It was just, you know, I wouldn't go to the toilet, I'm on the laxatives. And these types of things can happen. Food disorders, all of these things that can occur if you're not able to actualize and have a coach that spots the signs. And I guess for me, you mentioned being lucky earlier. I'm lucky in the sense of I've been there. And I sometimes, you know, I think that people are thinking, bloody hell, she's got so many things wrong with her. But I want to talk about it because it helps people understand this is not a joke. We're pushing to extreme levels of low body fat. But it looks cool on social media. So it's like, oh, well, I'm part of something now. You know, I've got purpose. You mentioned earlier control. But are we looking at the bigger picture when you're 60, 65? You might be lucky. You might be genetically gifted. You might be all right. But for a lot of people that are just dipping in and out of this, there's so much more to it. And when you look at, you know, the food pathologies and that, what you mentioned there is gold. You know, people that are using PEDs and they look sick at the gym. Also, these types of people, and I don't want to, you know, label people, but they eat a lot of food in an off season because they're smashing a load of PEDs, or genetically, you know, they can get away with more per se. Again, I'm not bashing anyone because maybe some people will see this as a lucky position, but the junk food, you know, in high excess, the digestion kickback, your mood, how you feel, what happens with your physique. But then we've spoken about before the incorporation of, you know, in off season, having little things, having off plan meals and having control, that actually that's a much better way to do it psychologically and physiologically. But you see these high PED users eating a lot of food, all of these things, and it equates to these almost disordered ways of thinking. And you're in this like, well, everyone else is doing it, I'll do it. And that adds to the health risk as well through the nutrition side of things.
Yeah, I mean, I think I don't know if the dirty bulk thing is still a thing anymore. I mean, I know back in the 90s it used to be a really big thing where like you literally, if you were a guy and you were eating less than 6,000 calories, you were not a
You're a
bodybuilder.
pussy.
Yeah, exactly. And if you weren't eating a burger and fries 3 times a day and drinking your eggs out of the carton completely, like there was just so many silly rules and like health was just completely being neglected. And I think we've gotten away from that. It seems like we're starting to get coaches who understand the concept of food quality and diet breaks and all this other stuff, but it's hard. I mean, food quality is getting worse and worse. I mean, I don't know how it is where, I mean, obviously where you guys live, it's probably a lot fresher,
Yeah.
more whole food ingredient based. We actually had a farmer on our podcast today,
Oh.
and it's frightening. I mean, it is the way that our meat in this country is treated. And you got to think about that, right? Like if you're eating beef, cows are not supposed to eat corn. Like their stomachs don't know how to process that. So if you're feeding a cow shit that it's not supposed to eat, and then you're pulling it away from its herd, which makes it stressful, and then you're also creating a negative environment for that animal, that animal is sick and it's unhealthy, and then you're killing it, and then you as a human being are ingesting that sick animal.
Yeah.
So there's no wonder why in America we have lactose intolerance, gluten intolerance, we have all sorts of attention deficit disorders and all these other psychiatric issues.
Yeah.
100% coming, I mean, I don't want to say 100%, but let's say very easily correlatable to our food supply because it's just not good. And I see no problem with junk food. I really don't. I think if you it's junk food to me is like a drug.
And it's appropriate to where you're at, right?
There's nothing, if you want to go out once a month and drink and do Molly at a club, okay, that's not going to damage your life. But if you're going out drinking and doing Molly 5 times a week every week, you're going to have a fucking problem.
For sure.
So junk food is the same way. If you want to have pizza and burgers and chicken wings and fries and donuts a couple times a month, go right ahead. Even once a week, go ahead. It's not going to do anything to you. I mean, obviously, if you're a competitor, you can't eat like that for a while just because there is calorie density versus nutrient density. But for your average person, there's nothing wrong with that. It's just the problem is that in our country, especially in America, it's cheap, it's easily accessible, and there's no rules governing it whatsoever. So you can do as much of it as you'd like, as often as you'd like, and nobody says anything. There's no stigma against it. Whereas like in other countries, and I know like, you know, how I grew up, if you didn't eat at home and you were eating stuff at a restaurant, or if you ate like French fries or burgers, like you would be immediately shunned by your family. They'd be
Oh.
like, what is wrong with you? Why are you eating like such trash?
Yeah.
Because it was like, it was, you were considered to be like a lower class citizen because you weren't taking care of yourself. Whereas here, because we've, this pendulum has swung in this completely, you know, body positive, be whatever size, healthy at any size, nobody has a problem. Well, there's repercussions of eating like that. And I know myself, like when I have a weekend where I let everything slip through the cracks and I eat whatever I want, on Monday morning, Tuesday morning, I don't feel good. Like if I go out to eat two or three times over the course of a Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, it accumulates and it bothers me. My stomach's not as good. My brain fog is higher. My motivation is lower. My energy is zapped. My mood isn't as good. It's a little bit more flat. And that's got everything. Like you are what you eat. Absolutely. And if you still don't believe that, if you have to be convinced that quality food is the way to go, and then understand, like you have to dial in quality first. And once you figure out quality, then you can start to play around with quantity.
It's a funny sort of, I guess, mindset as well around the sort of the junk food, as it were. I certainly found that, in the past, I'd frame it in certain ways to be able to feed into me being allowed to have the foods that weren't on my food plan. And my coach would, it gets to the point in off season where you have off plan however many times and whatever. And I used to try and find these ways to fret. It's exhausting, Aaron. Like, there's the restriction after it because you wake up feeling like shit. You've got distension in your stomach, all of these things. And for me, with my clients and for myself now, it's like, what is the off plan for? Are you going with family and friends? Are you going with loved ones? Are you creating memories? I've got a client that really loved our podcast together. I mentioned to you two clients that were like, this man, I love his voice. Anywho, I digress. But she really loves wine, Beth, and it's very high grade wine. So she will sit with her husband and it's an occasion. And, we're incorporating that. And it's really nice to be able to do that because it's like, it's not just a cheap bottle of wine and she's just, knocking it back. It's like there's a sit down meal on plan with a glass of wine or things like this. And it's like, what is the thought process coupled
Intention.
with? Yeah, exactly. And I've had to learn that myself rather than, all these weird pathologies in my own head. It's certainly a journey
Same.
at times, but
I've had to do it. I used to swing the pendulum way too far to the left and right because I lived under that mindset of like, well, I can't have it, then I have to have all of it.
for sure.
Right? Like I'm going to deprive myself every single week and then it's going to bubble up and then one weekend I'm just going to be a glutton completely and just eat everything in sight. I'm going to eat all the pizza and then I'm going to order burgers after that. And then while I'm eating the burgers, I'm getting ice cream and cookies delivered after that. And then you don't realize how fast and how easy it is to mow down 6 or 7,000 calories of bullshit and what it actually does to your body and how it actually also triggers your mind to expect and want that type of flavor. Because when I cook, you know, I a friend of ours here in California hunts and he killed an elk and he had like 200 pounds of elk meat. It was moving across the country and he's like, I can't bring it with me, so I'm just going to give you guys as much elk as you want. So I got like 40 pounds of elk burger and it's super lean and you have to flavor the fuck out of it because it's 99% fat free. So until you marinate it and put some fat on it to actually let it absorb some of the flavor. It's very dry and very bland. But 99% of the time for people like us, we're eating for function. We're not eating for flavor. But I think that can be a slippery slope because then if you go from being so fuel source based to then I want to derive some pleasure from my food, well then you might go overboard and that's a risk that you have to take to also. So I think there's a lot of considerations. And if you think about like again, most of your listeners are not blind to the fact that these variables exist, and they understand the basics, and they're well beyond the basics. that the only lever left to pull for many bodybuilders is the psychological lever.
Love
That's
that.
the last opportunity you have to make any sort of improvement. You know how to train, you know how to do cardio, and you're loyal to that. You know how to eat and you're loyal and consistent with that. You understand the value of sleep. You understand the value of not exercise activity. So what else do you have left to improve? Probably this.
Yes, I absolutely love that. I'm so glad you said that. It's, you know, like you mentioned earlier, right? You can maybe win a trophy. You can, you know, do really well in the sport, depending on the timing, you know, who turns up, et cetera, et cetera. But are you building skills that build a mindset? Because if you can really, you know, allow your coach to help you dig deep on this, allow yourself to actualize how you think and feel on a daily basis. And this goes for all areas of life. We mentioned on the last podcast, we were speaking about sex life. You know, there's so many things that your thoughts and feelings of your physique-based goal, it creeps into every single area. If we can work on the mindset, you can become a productive human and a bodybuilder, and you also see the sport very, very differently. You win by stepping on stage, peeled to the fucking bone. It's you've already won by getting there, rather than this, like, you have to win the trophy, otherwise you're a failure, everyone's going to be pissed off, et cetera, et cetera. And also leading on from that, you know, when I first started out, I used to get people say, oh, you didn't win. And I'm like, no, and it used to upset me. Now with my mindset, and I, you know, I go in and I'm like, I've won by stepping on stage and choosing to do this and being privileged to do this. And if I get awarded for what I've brought, cool, I've done my best. But have a good day and celebrate the journey. And that often gets lost because the mindset isn't being worked on. You're going to maybe cheat on your diet. You're not going to follow the basics. Off the back of the show, where are these people ending? You know, with this junk food and post show, it's fucking wild if we're not working on the mindset, you know?
That gluttony post show, man. I mean, it's no different than if you take a lifestyle client and you take a woman who's been on the yo-yo roller coaster her whole life of, you know,
Hard.
deprive Monday through Thursday and then Friday through Sunday, it's a shit show.
So
All
hard.
you're with bodybuilding, all you're doing is just expanding that, right? So for 16 weeks, you're on point, and then for however long afterwards until you get your shit together, you're not on point. So where's the balance? Like, where's the balance in any of this stuff? And it's sad that we have to have the vegan versus carnivore fight.
Yeah.
And it's sad that we have to have the low carb versus the high carb fight. And it's sad that we have to have the strength training versus cardio fight. Like, at some point, as a normal, logical, functioning human being with a brain, understand that the answer is probably somewhere in the middle. It's somewhere in the middle of all of that. And it sucks to say it, because the middle is boring for most people, right? Like, but to me, I function really, really well in the middle. And I know that if I can keep inching up towards the higher level of my standards, I'm never that far away from how I want to look and feel. I'm probably better than most of the people that are down here that aren't paying attention to the stuff that I'm paying attention to. And I know that I don't want to do the work of the people that are above me. And that level of acceptance is a really beautiful, freeing place to be that a lot of people never get to, because they either push themselves all the way to the top when they don't belong there, or they completely give up on themselves because the drive up to the top was so awful that they didn't want to do it. So they needed to drop their standards completely, and then they never rebound or recover properly. So as a bodybuilder, if you're going to do this sport, you have to embed seasons of balance into it, just to be able to recover your psychology and recover your relationship with all of this stuff to make it as reasonable as possible. And I bet by doing that, you'll probably have a much better and more successful long-term career in it, as opposed to being able to crash and burn after two or three shows.
Yeah, for sure. I had Nick Bagley on the pod and he said exactly what you've just said there. And it stood out to me when I recorded with him because he said, you've got to get good at the maintenance. And what does that, you know, what does that involve? And it's like when you reverse out from a show and you get to a point in an off season where you can start integrating off plan and, you know, the competitor feels recovered, that mindset is feeling better, you know, health-wise, more functional because it takes a while sometimes. And when you start to integrate these off plan, and I love that you called it intention because it certainly is, because that's what I feel like is missing sometimes. It's like I'm going to have an off plan and smash the granny out of it. And it's like, it's food, you know, and who you with, what are you trying to do from that experience? And like we're talking about, you know, food choices, etc. There is the option to go for a burger that you might go for a steak burger rather than a McDonald's or things like this. So you're still having like what we would class as off-plan foods, which
Sure.
vary, but you can go for maybe a higher grade, pay a little bit more money, you know, actually get dressed up, feel nice. We're always in gym gear. We're always like, right, I'm going to war. It's like, why can't we just, you know, try and see it for what it is and go, okay, I'm going to have a really nice quality meal and enjoy the experience. And it's that all or nothing approach, which I guess for some competitors, it's quite hard, you know, they might be listening and it's quite hard for them to actually work out how that would actually be a thing, whether you're someone that maybe self-restricts, maybe you overeat, where is that middle? But you certainly need to, I believe, look inside, you know, where's this stemming from? Where are these psychological thought processes stemming from? You mentioned yo-yo diet and things like this. It's pretty traumatic for people we work with, isn't it? You know, it's so hard on them. You just want to help, don't you? So tough.
It's hard. It's hard because they have to be ready to help themselves, and they have to be ready to have some tough conversations. And you're not going to break through to every single person. So if you're a coach who's listening to this, just don't feel that you're failing somebody if you're trying. You know, if you're not trying, obviously, then you're not doing your job. But if you're truly listening to the client, if you're actually trying to get information from them, if you're challenging their belief systems, and you're doing it in an empathetic way, you've exhausted all your options. There's some people, I don't want to say that anybody's beyond repair, but repair has to be an inside job. They have to be willing to do that work to then actually be able to recover. Like I have a girl that started with me today, former athlete, 5'11", 155 pounds, and she eats 840 calories a day.
Oh, shit.
So I told her, I said, listen, the next 6 months of your life are going to suck. And why are they going to suck? Because you're going to put a weight on.
Yeah.
Not because you're going to feel like shit. You're going to feel great. You're going to feel wonderful. You're going to finally put fuel back in the gas tank. And you're not going to keep running. She runs for an hour every morning when she wakes up and then doesn't eat until like noon.
Blimey.
And I just told her, I said, like, listen, the reason why this is going to suck for you, because you've been trying to pursue smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller because you thought that was the ultimate prize at the end of the tunnel. And all you've done now, she just got a diagnosis of PCOS. She had a diagnosis of hypothyroid. No shit. Not a surprise. But you're not beyond repair. We're going to recover you. Just understand that for the next 4 to 6 months, do not put any emphasis on aesthetics. Do not put any emphasis on what the number on the scale says, because we don't give a shit. Consider yourself to be a sick person who's going through recovery, because that's what you are. You're a sick individual. If you're eating and operating, and she's a lawyer too, or she's in the law field. So she like works till like 2 in the morning some days. I'm like, so you got all these things that are working against you, yet you're still so fixated on this idea of aesthetics. Like you're 25 years old. If you keep going down this road, you're going to turn into one of these women that has menopause at 35, that can't conceive, that has no libido, that has no self-worth, and that's going to be your future. And you're going to turn into one of these broken 45-year-old women that I have to work with. But you're in a privileged position to start now and recover and be a great, great person for the rest of your life and do whatever you want with your physique, do whatever you want with your performance. But you have to put this uncomfortable work in on the front end now. And that's going to be the challenge. It's going to be a weekly challenge. I mean, I've already told her. I said, you better be prepared to get on the phone with me every week and have some tough ass conversations. Because if you don't do it now, we're going to miss a massive opportunity to get you healthy.
For sure. And how you feel about yourself on the day to day. Like, I didn't know till I got, I'm like 18 months into my off season. I feel like the sexiest I've ever felt. And I know that's a bit of a, for me, I don't talk about myself in this way, Aaron, but I know you're an
But you
empowered
should.
person.
But you
And
should.
it's wild feeling this way at the highest body weight, well, nearest the highest body weight I've been for 12 years. And I'm like, I feel so fucking good, but I had to get to a good health standpoint to go, fuck, I don't want to be lean right now. I want to have some curves and I want to have energy and be able to get through each day. And I think if people can get to that point, they're like, fucking hell, I can actually train properly. I can, you know, have a relationship outside of bodybuilding and multiple relationships and just feel good day to day. And it's like, whoa, I've got some glutes, I've got some legs, I feel quite good. And it's an out of body experience. I didn't know that would come out today, Aaron. But yeah, it's until you get.
Quality of life. And can you imagine if you were so fixated on being smaller, what right now while you're recovering from surgery, your recovery would take 10 times as long and you probably wouldn't fully recover.
And I actually mentioned this on a podcast about scale weight a couple of weeks ago. And I said, old me, and I'm happy to say it how it is, I probably would have tried to put off the surgery because I'd had a planned mini cut coming up, you see, and I probably would have put it off. And it's so sad that I think that way. It makes me sad because I know there's so many people that will resonate with that. But now it's like, for fuck sake, I need to focus on my health. My aesthetic will be fine. I will recomp off the back of this, especially because I'm assisted. There's that light at the end of the tunnel, but now I can't even walk properly. So it's like, crutches have just been removed. So I'm like this sort of slow person walking, and I'm like, I can walk. Like, it's amazing. But like you say, if we're focused on the aesthetic or self-restricting, I know myself from, previous times of needing to have maintenance at least or a surplus, you recover so much quicker. But it's very hard to sometimes tell people that because it's like, I can't have more food when I'm not doing anything. I'm going to get fat,
It just depends on what that metabolic discrepancy is. It just matters how long have you been depleting yourself, or how long has your energy expenditure been exceeding your energy input. For most people, like for lifestyle people, I don't believe in the degradation of metabolism argument. I don't see it. I don't practically see it. I don't see it anecdotally. Most people are fat because they eat too much. Most people are putting on weight because they're eating too much and moving too little. That's typically the case. Now, in the context of extreme bodybuilding or extreme restriction or extreme weight loss or extreme body transformation, yes, of course, there's a metabolic implication because most of the folks that are suffering from this have a very high output and a very low input of food. You can only do that for so long until the body says, I am not going to survive on this anymore. And I'm going to start to downregulate all of my systems. And one of the clearest cut ways to see and identify this is if you're a woman. Have you lost your cycle? Do you have amenorrhea? Is that something you're suffering from? That is a clear-cut sign that your body is no longer healthy, and the last thing on your mind should be aesthetics. If you're a man and you've lost every ounce of libido, and if you have lost erectile function, that's another sign that your body is telling you that you have now shut down the capability to breed. If that capability is taken away from you, you are no longer a healthy person. So the last thing that an unhealthy person needs to worry about is regaining their physique. They need to regain their health first, and then their body becomes responsive enough to then warrant some type of a physique change. But until that happens, that should not be the first. Like when I tore my Achilles, I didn't give a fuck that my body fat percentage went up by 2 points. Who cares?
You
I
got
can't
that.
walk. Like you couldn't walk for how long? Like the last thing on your mind is where are my abs today? Who gives a shit? I got the most elemental portion of me taken away. And I think that's the problem is we like maybe you have to lose a little bit. Maybe you have to go through a period of time where something human gets taken away from you for you to appreciate what you actually have. Because this undying need to take the perfect picture and set yourself up to look your, like the most amazing person on earth on Instagram, because all you're doing is just showing it off to other people. Nobody is sitting there with their photographs or their trophies and just hugging them all day long, appreciating them. That's not how it works. It's always what's next. Who did, what do you mean? You didn't see it? You didn't see how good I looked? Like you're looking for that validation from the outside world. That's the only reason why it's alluring at all. Because nobody's sitting there and being like, I did a bodybuilding show, but nobody knew about it. But can you imagine if there was no crowd, there was no social media, and you just built this physique? You went in front of a judge in some private room somewhere and they judged you. They gave you a score and you walked out. Nobody would bodybuild anymore. Nobody would bodybuild anymore. There would be no spectacle about it. But we do it because we're seeking affirmation, we're seeking validation.
It was actually, that reminds me, I competed in COVID. I went over to Portugal and it was like a tumbleweed could go past because there was no one there. And I agree fully there. Now I do it for myself and I'm sure you know that, but it's like it wasn't a bodybuilding show, it wasn't competing to me. There was competitors there, but it was very weird. There was just a cameraman and some judges, and I was like, well, this isn't what, and that's actually got me thinking there as well, what I get from the sport and competing. It's like, that felt it felt good to do it, but it didn't give me that same level of justification. I like because you make me think differently, Aram. It's super cool to have that because it's like, what would you do if there was no audience? And what drives you to do this extreme sport?
Yeah, I mean, I've gotten, I'm 40 years old now. I know I look better than most 40-year-old men. I know I don't look it as some. So net positive. I know I feel pretty good. I know that I can do a little bit better. So the goal for me this month is clean up my weekend behavior, just not eat out as much. And when I do eat out, to make better decisions. So instead of like pizza, burgers, and wings, it's going to be sushi, steak, and Mediterranean food, right? So lower fat, lower calorie, higher nutrient density, but still have a meal out because I still want to be out and be social and have a drink and have a beer and not worry about it. And then at some point, if I start to focus on something that I like, let's say, for example, there's a big pool party that happens in my town here. This guy that I know has a pool party every year in the middle of July. Okay. So from a vanity perspective, if I want to show up with the best possible thing that I can work on, which will still not really matter, right? Because who are you actually pleasing with
It's
that? Like,
wild, isn't it?
does anybody at the party actually give a fuck that I have four abs or three abs or striated shoulder? Nobody actually cares because they're so worried about themselves
Yes.
and what they look like that they're not going to really pay attention to me. And I'm not going there to like find a mate or spread my seed. I'm just going there just because I'm vain and insecure, and I want to hear what the response is of, wow, you look good, purely just to feed the ego. That's it. Now, if you have a healthy relationship with that and that doesn't make you stay up at night and that doesn't fuck you up emotionally, then go ahead. Like, I have a very, very productive relationship with vanity. I can turn it on and I can turn it off. I'm lucky. That's luck. That's got nothing to do with skill set, that's got nothing to do with my parents. That's just I some reason for some I'm not a competitive person.
It's
I can give a shit
cool
less. It's great. It's
though.
very freeing.
Yeah.
But there's other people that are very obsessed with that. And for that July 15th pool party, they'd start prepping for it in May or April. Like, they're going to start cutting for it now. And I'm going to be like, no, like maybe in mid-June, I'll start worrying about what I'm going to look like in the middle of July. I don't care. Like, maybe I'll spend 4 weekends and I won't go out to eat for 4 weekends. And then I'll show up to the party as lean as humanly possible. But I know I'm not going to be lean as somebody else. So I'm not going to worry about that. But a lot of people don't have that attitude. They have this undying need to be validated. And I used to be like that. So I know how it feels. But what I can tell, if there's any message that I can give to your audience, is at some point, if you can get to a place of acceptance and you know that you're ultimately the one in control, whichever way you want to go, it's your choice. But as long as you're logical, reasonable about it, and it doesn't impact your quality of life, then do whatever the hell you want, and it's going to be so much easier.
For sure. That self-actualization and acceptance, like you say, it's such a fucking vibe. Like working on this myself, this is why I say it. It gets me so excited as to what you can feel like on the day-to-day basis when you're not checking yourself in the mirror 5 times a day for no reason. And it's just so fucking freeing, like you say. It's just such a vibe and what a great message. Now, before we wrap up, I have a listener question from a new listener. She's a Southern girl. Love her accent. I've got to say that. And she's also 9 weeks out from her bodybuilding competition. And her name is Melissa. Now, she actually works with bariatric clients as well. So I messaged her about would she like to ask a question? She said, oh, I work with bariatric clients as well. So super cool. I think similar to you, actually, sometimes she helps clients and they don't have the surgery because they buy into the lifestyle and they really love it. And it was so nice to hear about that and you talk about this in this way as well. Now, she asked something that I'm very passionate about, and I'd like to get your take on it. When, influencers or however we want to frame it, talk about tracking food essentially leads to disordered eating, or if you track food, you have a food disorder. Now, I feel like tracking serves an excellent education purpose and it should be flexed between, depending on the client. What is your take on that? Because I think that that's quite a pivotal subject.
Like anything else, right? Like, is the gun the thing that's dangerous, or is the person holding the gun dangerous? Like, tracking food is a tool. It is just a tool. If you don't have to, you don't have to use tools emotionally. You have to use tools logically. Now, if you believe, or if somebody believes that tracking food is disordered, it says more about that person than it says about the tool.
I like that.
The tool is not what creates the disorder. The person using the tool either imperfectly or improperly or unreasonably is what makes that tool disordered. So, I mean, I can either again, personally for me, I'm not overwhelmed by tracking food. The reason why I'm not overwhelmed by tracking food is because I cook 95% of the food that I put in my mouth. So if I'm going to cook it and I'm going to have it in containers in my refrigerator and all I have to do is portion it out onto a plate and weigh it, that takes me 13 seconds of my day. I eat basically the same 15 things every day unless it's the weekend.
Me
So
too.
I don't have a problem with tracking food. But if you're somebody who's eating 3 to 4 meals out a week or more, if you don't have a meal structure, if you're eating on the run constantly without a plan, well, yeah, tracking food's going to be a pain in the ass and you're going to have a shitty relationship with it and it's not going to feel as effective. So it's not the tool that's the problem, it's the individual holding that tool and what have you taught them and empowered them to do with it. So for me, I always tell my clients, do you know the basics? I ask them like straight up, like first consult before they even buy anything, do you know the basics of nutrition? Or the, what do you mean? I'm like, do you know where your protein comes from? Can you identify protein sources? Yes. Okay. Do you know what a calorie is? Kind of. Yeah. It's like a unit of measurement, right? Yeah. Okay. Do you understand where carbs come from? Yes. Do you know where your fat's coming from? Yes. Okay. If you know the basics and you know what you should be doing, why are you hiring me? Well, I nothing's worked. Well, have you tracked food? Well, not for any length of time. Bingo. Now we have an opportunity. Now we're going to take that tool and we're going to deploy it. And we're going to make sure that we gather enough data to then be able to create a protocol that will serve that individual's goals. Now, we don't have to track forever, but if you're tracking and you're eating that way anyway, who cares? It's not taking anything away from your lifestyle. I'm not saying take the scale to the restaurant with you. That's fucking silly to me. I'm not saying take the scale to the birthday party with you. That's silly to me too. But if you're controlling your food at your house, I have two scales. I have two counters, and there's a scale on each counter. Because
Easy.
I'm so lazy that I won't literally bring my scale from one counter to the other. If I turn around with one pot of food to one counter, there's a scale there. And if I go to the other counter, there's a scale there too. Okay. Like it doesn't remove the pleasure from eating to me. I can flavor my food however I'd like, but I want to like I make a game out of it. I make a game out of it. I'm like, okay. I ate this many calories. I stayed within my budget. I feel great. Great. I have a correlation to amount and quality to how I feel. And then on the weekends, when I go overboard and I eat pizza, I log all that stuff too. And then I can see like, okay, when I play the how many calories can I eat today game, it produces a certain type of a feeling. Now I have a correlation to that feeling. So I think if you're capable of removing the emotion away from the tool and use it for what it's meant to be, then it's a very productive thing to do. And I think to label it disordered is very unfair and it's very short-sighted because anything can be dangerous in the wrong hands.
I will say it as well, you know. Unfortunately, from what I've seen, when these things are put out on social media, it's often people that have ended up with a food disorder for whatever reason, and maybe they haven't dealt with things that have accumulated towards this, and they've blamed tracking food for this. And that upsets me because, like you say, it's unfair. It's removing an education tool for anyone from any walk of life. You could dip in and do 3 months, learn enough, continue with your life. You know, there's so many ways to do this, and I think that it is unfortunate. I also think that sometimes the delivery from the coach could potentially cause maybe what happens with the client's journey. But yeah, we could do a podcast just on that, but I feel like
It's
that.
a silly notion. It's like anything else. Like I always hear about this, like it's the chicken or the egg phenomena. It's the does the gun kill people or the people kill people? Like if we took food track, if we, it's basically by saying that food tracking is disordered, you can take it a step further and say that understanding where calories are coming from is also disordered.
For sure.
So is that all? Like having awareness now is a disorder?
And also, you know, a lot of these people that sort of bash tracking, they do intuitive eating. Now, what the fuck is intuitive eating? Because that
I
can
mean,
be.
if I intuitively ate, I would be at Chick-fil-A and McDonald's every single day. But that's where my intuition takes me.
Yeah,
I
and
live in California. We have In-N-Out Burger, right? We've probably heard of In-N-Out.
yeah.
I've eaten an In-N-Out 3 times in 3 years. Now, if I was intuitively eating, I would be at In-N-Out every single night for dinner because it's fucking delicious. I would be intuitively drinking margaritas 4 nights a week. I would be intuitively eating birria tacos and quesadillas 3 nights a week, and I would intuitively feel like shit because that's what my intuition makes me want to do. I'm not reaching for chicken breast because I love chicken breast. And that's the problem is like this, if it was 100 years ago and we didn't have any of these hyper palatable foods, yeah, intuitive eating would be easy. It's not hard in that environment. But trying to intuitively eat in this environment, you still have to mindfully eat.
And also, it intuitive is going to mean very different to different people, right? And it's like, if if you're as a coach not given education for this as a learning tool, then you say, I'm going to teach you how to intuitively eat. It's like, what the fuck is that? What are the things that can come from that? Potentially disordered ways of thinking or eating, because you might eat a load, then the next day not eat. All of these things, it does upset me, like I say, and I said this when she sent the question. I was like, great question, because I know that Aram and I will align fully here. Bashing anything, there's normally, like we said right at the start, there's something behind it, right? Buy my intuitive eating fat loss program, guys. Don't need to track a calorie again. But yeah,
Yep. Yeah,
it's
because
hard.
calories don't matter. Money doesn't matter. Speed limits don't matter.
What
I
matters is
just think
body transformation.
exactly that's it. We've gotten to a place where it's almost like rules are not good, or rules are negative, or rules are perceived to be evil. But I think without rules and without structure, humans are not humans. Humans do not operate in their at their best self when they're allowed to just do whatever the fuck they want to do. And that's so evidently clear when you look at today's adults. There's a reason why you make so much progress from childhood to adolescence to adulthood, because every minute of your day and every structure of your life is dictated by a rule and a structure. And then the second you leave university and you're 22 years old and you have free rein and free will, that's when people get fucked up. They get fucked up because they don't have structure anymore and they don't have personal responsibility and accountability, and it's everybody else's fault and it's something else is wrong and it's not me. As opposed to auditing your behavior and evaluating and self-reflecting and saying, maybe I'm the problem.
And looking at what you're consuming, what's behind these influences, and what is your goal, and what, like you say, dig inside, and it's like, what is in there that's potentially holding me back? Things like the yo-yo diet and things like this. And what are my limiting beliefs? And hopefully people listening, have got a coach that they can work on this type of thing with as well, because your longevity as either a bodybuilder, competitor, a lifestyle client is going to be so much longer if you can forge that relationship and stay with someone for a long period of time. That person becomes your confidant and your number one fan. So yeah, I mean, well, like we said, there's a lot to talk about in this episode, and we just have the vibe, Aaron. So I'm so grateful we did this today. Thank you so much.
I'm happy your recovery is going well.
Thank you. It was very nice for you to reach out for off the back of what you have, because I think, like you said, not until something happens like this where you can't walk. People that know me, I'm not trying to go, I can't walk, give me pity, but it's a fucking big thing, isn't it?
Well,
Why?
you can use your story to help others, and I think you've done a really nice job of it. You have to chronicle these things. It's not like you're sitting there crying on camera and looking for pity. You're just saying, hey, this is the reality of my situation. And maybe the way that I deal with it might be able to help you deal with something that's hard in your life.
For sure. Thank you, mate. I really appreciate it. And last thing, I have a client, L, that shares a lot of your posts on her stories. She's a competitor, but she really resonates with you probably the most out of anyone on social media. So can you give L a shout out?
Of course, El, thank you very much. And what was the woman who was 9 weeks out? What was her name?
Melissa.
Melissa. Well, be kind to yourself after the show.
Yeah, for
And
sure.
do what you need to do to recover properly. And I wish you good luck. And El, thank you very much for being an audience to my crazy messages on a daily basis. And if there's ever anything you guys need from me or you want to pick my brain, please feel free to do so.
It is actually him on Instagram as well. He does not have a VA.
It is me. Yeah. I don't know. You always get me, unfortunately.
Thank you, my G. I'm going to speak to you soon.
Thank you so much.
Bye. Hey.